Thanks for the kind introduction. I'm Reinhard Hartler. I'm presenting joint work from University of Erlangen, Braunschweig, and IBM Research Zurich. I want to talk about system software and its configurability. And in my research that we have done over the last few years, we have found that especially Linux is incredibly configurable. This tremendous amount of configurability has shown that the complexity of such a system increases considerably. And as you can imagine, if you ever had to try to recently compile a Linux kernel, finding the best configuration, particularly if you have a specific use case in mind, is not an easy task. It's actually quite a hard task. And to give you an idea about the scope of the problem that we're currently talking about, let's have a look at Linux 3.2. Linux 3.2 contains almost 12,000 user configurable feature that you have to configure if you want to compile a Linux kernel. We're talking about 2,000 build system files, MAC files. We're talking about 20,000 source code files, not including headers. And we're talking in these source code files of about 90,000 ifdev blocks. So this is to give you an idea about what kind of beast we're talking about. This is the size, the reverberability of Linux here. So as already mentioned, configuring Linux is really a hard task. This is a hard task because Linux also contains an ample amount of functionality. We're talking about 24 non-toy ports, so ports that are really used in production. We're talking about a myriad of drivers, default scheduling strategies, security subsystem, you name it. So it's really an ample amount of functionality that we hear, that we are being offered. Unfortunately, it's not really obvious from all this amount of functionality to see what exactly your specific use case really requires. What's even worse is that all these configuration options may appear or disappear at any new Linux release. So if you're building a production system that has to track the latest version of Linux, this can be a problem. Fortunately, if you take just the kernel that a Linux distribution provides, these Linux distribution employ distribution maintainers that do all of this hard work. So they invest a tremendous amount of manpower to review these features and select that for you. However, they can also make only little assumptions about the hardware that you're using or the use case that you may have. So let's have a closer look at this problem. This can be on a very abstract level summarized that on the one side we have the configuration side, which is centralized. You have this configuration tool, you have this very nice configuration language called kconfig, where you can describe the constraints and the features that you have. On the other side, we're talking about the implementation. There we are talking about the makefiles, we're talking about the ifdev blocks, and so on. So if you go to your Linux distributor and just install the standard kernel, then you get a one-size-fits-all solution. This one-size-fits-all solution, on the one side, selects you exactly, okay, this is the configuration that's very likely to work for you, you're happy with that, and you don't have to deal with the ifdev hell and convoluted makefiles and whatever. So what's the problem here? The problem here is that without a given use case, the distribution maintainer has to include all possible functionality that the Linux kernel possibly provides. As a side effect of this, this also maximizes the attack surface because, well, you have all this functionality enabled, and this is really the state of the art. However, if you say, I have a very specific use case, I have a use case that only has to serve a couple of web pages, but this has to be as secure as possible, then you are possibly interested in a hardened system that does not provide all functionality that Linux comes with, but only the specific functionality that you need. So the solution that I'm going to present you in this presentation is a way how to automatically derive from a given use case an ideal configuration that only includes the functionality that you need for your specific use case, which in the end minimizes the trusted computing base here. So how does this work? We start with a specific scenario. Let's assume that you have a web server. Let's stick with this web server example. The goal is to automatically derive this tailored kernel configuration. How do we do this? We do this first by setting up the Apache web server into production and leave it running. And while keeping it running, we observe where in the kernel is the code that is actually being executed during this dry run. For this, we're using standard functionality that's already included into the kernel. It's the function tracer ftrace, which is able to come up with the addresses in the text segment that's being executed in the kernel. With these addresses, we look up in the debugging symbol informations what are the exact source files and the source line locations inside the Linux kernel sources where this functionality that's being accessed by your specific Apache web server configuration actually being used. With this information, we can look up, okay, what are the precise source files and what ifdev blocks do we actually need to include in our kernel configuration in order to provide all required functionality for this use case. So if we have identified all the source files and all the ifdev blocks, we're calling this the variation points, we establish an holistic variability model that contains all the constraints, all the interdependencies across the features in Linux and the ifdev blocks and the source files in the Linux code. If we combine this big formula phi with all the ifdev blocks that we need in the source code, then we have a Boolean satisfaction problem, which we can pass through a SAT solver. So we employ on this big formula and the selected ifdev blocks, we pass it to a SAT solver and say, dear SAT solver, please come up with a configuration that leaves as many features as possible disabled. This is a standard feature of modern SAT solvers, and the result of the SAT solver will be a kernel configuration, exactly what we need here. So what are the challenges with this approach? The first challenge here is that first, during the observation phase of the Apache web server, we need to make sure that all the functionality that we need in production are actually being accessed during the tracing phase. For this reason, this approach works best with fairly homogeneous services where there's not much of variation in how they operate. Okay. With this, we can ensure that the traces are more or less sufficiently complete or include the functionality that you actually need. So the next thing is you need a kernel that has ftrace and debugging information. This is not always provided by standard distribution kernels. So in the evaluation section, we have compiled our own intermediary kernel that has this ftrace functionality and debugging information available. In future work, or nowadays, we already have seen Linux distribution that do include these tools. So that might be some further direction by now. And last but not least, as you can imagine, this holistic variability work is also challenging to come up with because it needs to contain all the feature dependencies and cross-street constraints and whatever in the kconfig variability language, which is not easy to come up with. You need to extract all the dependencies and the implications. What does enabling a specific features imply in terms of what source code files to enable? And last but not least, we also need to understand how ifdev blocks and source codes are nested or are made alternatives and so on. These parts are pretty technical. Actually, this is the main part of my PhD thesis that I intend to finish by end of this year. So if you have further questions about this, please ask me after the talk. The time is here too limited to explain how this formula is being established in detail. Let's suffice to say, this is previous work that we have published before and is available to us. So this big formula phi is solved in the Undertaker tool. I'm happy to give you references if you're interested in that. So let's come to the evaluation. We have evaluated that with a standard LAMP setting, which includes a Linux system with MySQL, Apache, and PHP, and have installed standard software that we use at our site in production, namely a DokuWiki installation and a PHP bulletin board system, PHP BB3. In order to systematically trigger all functionality so that we really make sure that all functionality is triggered, we use Google Skipfish, which is an automatic security scanner which basically clicks on all available links on the website provided here and produces you a detailed report about what possible security issues can appear here. We are not actually interested in these reports that Google Skipfish gives here, but we are more interested in having an automated way to access all functionality that our evaluation setup has. And for this, that's perfectly fine here. The resulting trace contained 5,377 unique kernel functions. So, of course, we had to enable some filter mechanisms so that kernel functions or kernel addresses that appear again and again are filtered and not counted again and again. After all this setup and all these traces have completed and stored, we need to establish this big formula and pass it to a SOT solver. The SOT solver comes up with a solution in about 70 seconds. Then we have booted the system and noticed that our kernel tailored configuration, while it does not have unnecessary functionality like a keyboard driver or mouse driver, because we didn't use it during the simulation, it was able to boot just fine and provide all functionality that we needed here. And we were not able to observe any performance impact here. OK, so now let's look at the resulting kernel. As mentioned before, for this evaluation, we are talking about three kernels. The first kernel is the distribution kernel that is shipped by the Linux distribution that we've been using. That's been the Debian distribution. The second kernel is an intermediary kernel because the Debian kernel did not include ftrace and no debug information, so we compiled the kernel ourselves. And the third kernel is the resulting kernel that's, well, basically the result of our approach. So to make things slightly more complicated, in Debian, most of the functionality is compiled as loadable kernel modules. We have observed that in Debian, for this particular use case, for this Apache web server, there have been 29 kernel modules loaded. All other modules were not loaded. We were talking about 1,093 configuration options out of these 12,000 possible were set to Y, and 2,200 were set were configured to be compiled as module. The intermediary kernel, we have disabled dynamic loadable kernel module support and ended up with 3,298 features set to Y. You may notice that the number of features here is slightly less than in the Debian kernel. The reason for this is because there are some drivers in Linux that are not used for our particular hardware. It was a virtual machine. Because of bugs in the Linux kernel, these drivers would prevent the system from booting, so we resorted to just disabling if they are not really necessary, but that was just a technical detail here. The resulting kernel configuration had only 379 kernel options set to Y, and since our tracing kernel did not include any kernel modules, we also have plain zero here. In order to get an idea of how much more secure our kernel has become, we have been looking at the CVE database over the CVE entries over the last 10 years and systematically, or it was a semi-automatic process, we have looked at all CVE entries that addressed a Linux kernel and extracted what kernel functions is in there. And we have determined that in the Debian kernel, we found that 179 of these kernel functions have been referenced by some CVE entry. In our resulting kernel application, we noticed that 10% less of these functions for which we are aware that there have been a security incident in the past are less, so we have 10% less functions with known vulnerabilities, which would have been prevented in the first place if you had used this technique. Okay, so what's another evaluation measure is, of course, the code size reduction. So if we again look at the demo kernel, we see that the loaded kernel, which means the bootable kernel image plus the 29 loadable kernel images that are loaded for this specific use case, we're talking here about 5.5 megabytes of kernel that is loaded. However, there is still 42 megabytes in total that are actually available. So if an attacker finds out some way how to load these kernel modules, and Linux comes with a loadable kernel or on-demand kernel modules, To be fair, we actually have to account all these 42 megabytes of executable code to the trusting computing base. As mentioned before, some drivers had to be disabled. So in the intermediary kernel, we are talking about 36 megabytes that's statically in the kernel. And for our resulting kernel, we see that less than 4 megabytes of executable code is in the resulting kernel, which makes this 90% less executable code. Okay, so let's wrap up. I have shown you an approach that significantly decreases the TCB if you are able to clearly specify what I'm going to use this Linux kernel for. So if you have a specific use case, then this approach that I've shown you is able to make this kernel much smaller and therefore much more secure. The whole approach is quite easy to use, so we have fully automated the process here. So there's actually, from a user perspective, very little things that you have to make sure here. Another thing that I did mention, the tailoring can also be assisted with whitelists and blacklists. These are useful, for example, if you want that the resulting kernel, well, you have, of course, used ftrace for tracing what kernel functionality, so the resulting kernel will normally also include ftrace, but you generally don't want ftrace in the production kernel, so you can add ftrace to the blacklist and it will be removed here. Where do we want to go from here? So far, we have used this on virtual machines, which we think is relevant, especially if you want to deploy this in the cloud, where everything is run anyways in virtual machines. We currently look at extending this on real hardware. We are looking at dropping the requirement of this dedicated kernel tracing. In fact, we already have managed this since publication of the paper. We already have included now loadable kernel modules, so we are able to trace and correctly identify code that's being used in kernel modules. It's technical because kernel modules can be loaded at arbitrary locations in memory, so this you have to take this relocation into account. And we are currently looking for better metrics how to measure the attack surface improvements. Having said this, are there any questions about your talk? I'm thankful for your attention. Thanks. Oh, that one, yeah. Well, we have downloaded the CVE database. We have categorized what is the description there. The CVE database comes with a large number of metadata that we could look up the date and the CVE number, of course, and the text. And from the text, we have looked, okay, does this look like a function name in Linux? And the semi-automated, the manual part comes in because everything that is found here, we have to manually review, is this actually a kernel function or not? And so that's the semi-automated part.
This is a very cute idea.
Thanks.
It's really nice, thank you, and very useful. One thing that you didn't talk about solving a very difficult problem. You're trying to decide what code will be used and what code will not be used at some point in the future. Right? So on the one hand, you have the risk for over-approximation because the Apache may call stuff in the kernel that branches off into doing things that may not necessarily could get away without doing that, potentially.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned it before, so the first thing that came up to our mind was we were setting up this, it's a real life story. So we have set up this this user, or I think it was an NFS server that we have tailored there, and it was working just fine. But then we tried to log into the machine locally, so it was a desktop machine, and it turned out that the kernel configuration did not include any USB drivers because the use case when we were tracing did not receive any inputs from the keyboard, so the resulting kernel did not contain anything. This was fine for the use case, but obviously you're right. So a critical part of this approach is that you manage to make your traces sufficiently complete. So we currently don't have a very good way to address this concern. So, of course, if you, you may end up in after a few months in production that the kernel accesses that your use case accesses some functionality in the kernel, which may not be available. I would say it's pretty comparable to also if you look at other functionality like SE Linux or AppArmor, where you observe, okay, how does your application behave, and I trace, okay, I allow only these syscalls or these functionality that the application actually uses, and then a year later you notice, well, now it uses something else. I think that's a quite similar problem here.
So, can I follow up?
Of course. Okay.
I'm about to suggest one. The context is that we faced a similar problem a few years ago. We were trying to reverse engineer automatically device drivers, and we couldn't get them to be exercised really fully so that we can observe the traces.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a very similar problem. And then we resorted to symbolic execution. And the rest is history, I guess. So one possibility would be to actually come from a program analysis perspective and say, can we produce something that is guaranteed to not be an under-approximation of the execution. We may err on the side of over-approximation, but I think you can actually achieve a guarantee that you will include all the code that will ever be necessary, but you may have included some that probably were off. And so I think it is possible to make this process not have any false negative.
Yes, and that would be my concern here. So the risk of false positives here would mean that the resulting kernel includes more functionality than actually needed, which may again impact the TCB size. But okay, it's always a trade-off. So do you want to include more functionality or do you want to be in doubt more secure? Yeah.
If you want to be really secure, I have a great solution for you.
Yes, actually, we have mentioned that in the paper. There are some security mechanisms, for example, F-Stack Protector or something that is modeled as a feature. We are not aware of any security features that have actually been turned off for for this Stack Protector. We have manually verified that it remained enabled. A more in-depth analysis showed that this security feature did have some runtime code, which is being executed and correctly detected by our traces. So this has been addressed. We cannot fully rule out that all security infrastructure is disabled. It also depends a bit on what kind of security infrastructure we're talking about. We have so far looked at a number of them that we were familiar with and have not identified any of one that have been accidentally disabled. However, with the white and blacklist functionality, if you know, okay, I really do want this security functionality to be enabled, and I know that it's probably hard to trace this, so you have two options. Either you use a better tracing mechanism that says that ensures that the trace will and will say, I need these IFTF blocks or I need this functionality. Or if you already know what kconfig option that would be, then you could place it on the whitelist and also have it enabled into the the kernel configuration. So to summarize, yes, we have looked at this. We haven't seen that in practice, but we already have means to address that.
You said that it's the fact that you come up with the way to do this without tracing the whole.
No, we come up in a way that we are able to use distribution kernels that have everything as module, so we are able to trace on the module, and we have found Linux distribution that already include this ftrace functionality and debug symbols. So this removes the step to using this intermediary tracing kernel that I have shown you in this presentation. Into the future, we won't need that if we are using these special kind distributions. Yeah, so, you're totally right. So this approach can also be combined with other approaches to improve the security. The point here was that the result is something that any system administrator can use without the need of any external tools. So we are really exploiting only the kernel built-in functionalities to configure a Linux kernel by clever observation and this holistic formula. But you're totally right. So everything that I've presented here is pretty much combinable with other approaches as well, yes.
So do you provide some interface for the users to specify in addition constraints for instance?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes.
I wondered whether one could, for example, combine the two. Instead of just shipping a kernel, you ship sort of an entire distribution that is minimized for some specific task, or
wow.
Maybe one could also learn from each other. I don't know if you could comment on that.
Well, that's a very broad comment. So. Well, as I said, this is pretty much combinable with other approaches. So the goal here was to make it as painless or as easy to use as possible from a system administrator perspective. If you're saying, okay, now I came up with a very specialized distribution, this would take the problem to a whole new level. And I'm not sure if you would be able to provide similar comfort of use, or we haven't experimented with that, but I can imagine that could work. It will need some work to think about is how to do it properly and still have it somewhat usable. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's this one?
Well, it's not a slide in particular, but
okay.
So I guess you hope that you could eliminate more of the CV much, it's ideal.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think this, well, it's really hard to say. So the CVE numbers may be a bit biased. So we already mentioned that in the paper that we actually hoped this number to be much higher. The thing is, we believe that there are many undetected security problems in code that are not reviewed on a daily basis, but are in more obscure drivers or in more obscure functionality that is usually shipped with Linux distribution, but just not reviewed as often as more often used distribution. So I think there is still a black number here of security reports in Linux that we just not know of, and they will gradually appear during some time. So I think this 10% is a bit biased. I think we are actually much better than that, but I don't have any don't have reliable data to show that here.
Any thoughts on how you might try to
measure? Excuse me, please.
Any thoughts on how to try to measure? I mean, I know you said you're looking for better metrics.
Yeah. So what we're currently doing is we're looking at static code analysis to look at what code paths are going there and trying to use the result of static analysis tools to get there some metrics about what code paths have been disabled by our configurability. So these are the things that we are currently looking at.
Contributor to the Ubuntu and Debian Linux distributions.
Yeah.
See some of this great stuff in Linux distributions coming up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.